Great, thank you. Yes, so we have everyone on the call, all the representatives, with the exception of Bertrand, the GAC representative, but we'll keep him in the loop with our regular report. There was a very useful and active discussion, I think, over the last several days with respect to NOMCOM appointees. I wanted to discuss with the group as we go through a potential agenda for today how you all want to address that. I'd also noted that we left our last call. We threw out the agenda item of a discussion at the beginning of this call regarding how you all would like to approach the next three or four meetings as we move up toward the July 25th deadline. So I also want to capture that as well. As I reviewed the dialogue via email over the last several days, I think, Chuck, you summed it up in perhaps the best way, which was that you noted that we had had a large amount of discussion about the NOMCOM rep issue, and what you wanted to get in terms of a thought was how that gets us to the final bell and how we want to approach things from there. So if I can just sort of have you tee that up and then take a cue as to how folks would like to approach this call vis-a-vis NOMCOM discussions and the bigger picture of how we want to bring this to a conclusion over the next several calls.
Okay, and so you're asking me to do that now, is that
correct? I liked how you sort of summed that up, and then I'd love to have others sort of join the discussion if we can do that.
Well, I don't know if everybody saw my message. I know Milton did because he already responded.
I didn't.
Basically, you know, I raised the question whether all of our discussion on NOMCOM reps is helpful in us heading towards some sort of a consensus voting structure. And I added the comment to the extent that it may be dealing with the NOMCOM issue helps us to come together with regard to, like, for example, what John suggested in terms of having a NOMCOM rep be from the business community. I think that it could be constructive. But if we're spending all this great dialogue, and I've enjoyed it, without us getting closer, I'm not sure that the time's well spent.
I'd be interested in anyone else, others' perspective on that, to see whether that has moved the ball or sort of where we are on that issue as well as the bigger picture. Anyone want to join the queue?
I would. This is Milton.
Thank you, Milton.
This is Steve for the queue.
Thank you, Sam Phillip.
Great, thank you. All right, Milton?
And Tony, please.
Okay, Tony.
Yeah, my as I said in the quick response to Chuck, my interest in the NOMCOM issue came from watching the contracting parties say that they really insist on parity between users and suppliers, and then seeing the business constituency say that under no circumstances would they accept the board governance committee proposal. And my discussion of NOMCOM was an attempt to find out whether, if we conceived of the NOMCOM votes as simply other additional user representatives, then maybe we might break that impasse. That was my logic. I think I have succeeded mainly in pissing off Avery, but I thought it might move us closer to some kind of agreement on voting distributions.
Thank you, Milton. Steve?
Yeah, I guess I would agree with what Milton said. I think this is part of, as I said in my posting, this is part of the puzzle we have to fashion here. There is also the issue of so-called parity and what's the relationship between the contracted party votes and the non-contracted party votes, but this may be part of the solution. And I don't think it's an all-or-nothing issue necessarily, and I thought the last exchange between Milton and Chuck is worth pursuing, which is maybe we should look at the NOMCOM role as primarily the role of chair, the NOMCOM appointee role as primarily the role of chairing the council. And helping to, you know, move the, as an independent person moving the organizing the council's agenda and moving it along. So that, I think that's worth further discussion.
Thanks, Steve. Philip?
I thought it was Tony first, but I'm happy to go ahead. Yes, I also think actually the discussion has been useful because I don't think you can come up with different seat scenarios unless we decide what we want the council to be. Do we want it to be representative of certain stakeholder blocks, or do we want it to be some sort of other beast that is not so representative? And I think that discussion has been very useful in doing that. I mean, one of the things I also had a look at earlier today was to look at some of the rationale for the current structure we have in the 2002 reform process, and it was interesting to see there statements up front saying that ICANN's primary role, as enshrined in its statutes in California, are to represent the public interest, and indeed the first description of the concept of a nominating committee was also phrased in terms of public interest, and for me, I think that was part of that contribution I made to the debate, which was to say that, you know, recognizing that was the ambition, it's questionable how it can be fulfilled with the process that we currently have.
Thank you, Philip. Tony, you're next.
Okay, most of it's been said, but I think at this stage it would be remiss not to look at this as an option. It may possibly provide a chink of light that we're all looking for. And I think even if it doesn't, a better common understanding of how the non-com fits into the process that we will buy into is helpful anyway. So I would support that we carry on exploring this as an option.
Thank you, Tim. Is there anyone else like to?
Yeah, this is Aubrey.
Thank you, Aubrey. Anyone else? You have the floor, ma'am.
Okay, thanks. I think it was an interesting discussion. I think that, indeed, part of what I was arguing in what Olga argued in the piece I forwarded from her and the mail I sent later about sort of the role, and it does fit the public service role in that it's the sort of the fact that the constituency picks someone in a consensus process, which means that the people they pick fit none of those constituencies precisely, but are indeed outside that, sort of obviating the argument that insiders can't pick outsiders. I think that, you know, that is basically something that can be shown not to be true. And also basically the role in making sure that distributions of region, gender, et cetera, are looked at does go a long way, I think, to say to provide a sort of, and it's balancing in a different way, but a balancing of making sure that all the public interests are indeed represented or as much as possible, given the fact that constituencies in their natural selection will choose people that are aligned with the constituencies. Now, maybe in time when we come back in 2 years, we will see that the non-commercial and the commercial have grown to be such open areas of discussion that all views are represented, and there really is no need for some outside addition. But I just don't know that we're going to get there, and we're certainly not at that point now.
Could I be added to the queue? And Alan.
Yes, Chuck and Alan. Aubrey, are you?
Yeah, I'm going to second.
Okay, thank you. Chuck?
Yeah, I guess I would argue it a little bit differently than Aubrey, probably for the same, and end up with the same result. I don't think it makes sense to see the NOMCOM reps as representative of the user community because there's no mechanism for making that happen. I rather see the value as an independent contributor to the process rather than one that's representative of the broader community. And I like the idea of the independence, as you've seen from some of my posts.
Thanks, Chuck. Alan?
I guess at what Avery said as modified by Chuck is pretty close to what I'm saying. I'll use as a simple example because I know it, my own example. I can't imagine how I would have gotten involved in ICANN, even with wider constituencies and stakeholder groups that reach out to try to form other constituencies, as is our ideal model. And, you know, I think I've contributed something. I think the views I have are different, perhaps, from some of the existing ones. So I strongly support the concept of NomCom at the moment. It may change, but that's not today.
Alan, just a question from Milton. I thought you were an ALAC liaison.
I'm a NomCom appointee to the ALAC, though. It could have been GNSO if NomCom had seen differently.
This is Albert. Can I make one more comment?
Yes, please.
This is in response to Chuck. I'm not sure what I said, and if I said representative, that was indeed wrong. What I mean is representing interests that may not be covered. And that's a distinction that I try to maintain, but sometimes I slip. And it's, no, obviously we are not representative, but we can be seen as representing various interests given the independent views that we come in with.
Got it. Good.
Just one more comment in response to Milton. To the extent that I have control of any of my senses, I'm not making this case because I'm a NomCom appointee. It's just that I understand the mechanism because of it.
Can I respond?
Yeah, certainly. You're the key, Milton.
Okay. I
have trouble hearing you, Milton.
Is that better?
Much.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I just, I don't, I understand what Chuck says about independence, and I think Avery made some good points in that regard, in the sense that there is a difference between somebody put forward for the council by a large group of the various stakeholders that represent ICANN, and the smaller constituencies. I think it was framed badly initially by talking about insiders versus outsiders. I think we've settled that issue. You know, the NomCom is, if anything, more insider than the constituencies, which are, you know, membership organizations. But it is different to have them appointed by this broad committee via consensus process. What I don't understand is how, Alan, you could say that, you know, you couldn't have gotten involved in any other way. If perhaps, you know, that might mean that there's something simply not right about the way ICANN allocates its resources. I know that NomCom advertises and pushes for people to go out and get things, but why couldn't that same process be applied to the constituencies, for example, to the GNSO constituencies?
I didn't say I couldn't. I said I have trouble imagining a scenario where the constituencies stakeholder groups as we're imagining them would end up having reached out to me and have been of interest to me. I didn't say it couldn't happen. I'm not pretending I'm prescient about what will happen in another, you know, completely different world. I'm just saying I have a hard time figuring out how it could have happened. That doesn't mean it couldn't.
Okay. Well,
thank you. Thanks, Milton. Anyone else would like to join the queue on this issue? Well, the consensus of that discussion is it's worthy to continue to explore the role of NomCom and how that may help the group achieve a compromise. You are welcome to do that now, but I would also like to just touch briefly on the concept of the way forward. You all may be very comfortable with the relatively free discussion we have had to date as a moderator, I'm somewhat challenged to convert that discussion into more of closure, I guess, as we move over the next couple of calls. And I would really appreciate some insights, thoughts, suggestions as to how we might approach that as a group. I think it's fine to continue to have these types of discussions. They're very useful, illuminating, and valuable. I'm just looking for the mechanism or what you all think will be the natural evolution toward closure here. Do I have anybody who'd like to comment on that?
Philip.
Thank you, Philip. Anybody else like to join the queue? Perhaps something you say will spark some, inspire some additional thoughts, Philip, please.
Okay. What I was going to say is that we may be in a better position before the next call to put a more concrete proposal to the group, although I'm not in a position now to do that. So that might help in terms of us having something more concrete to look at. But I think every discussion we have, in which is possibilities in terms of how that proposal may be nuanced, changed, or enhanced in order to make it the best possible one.
I'll jump in, Rob
and Alan.
Thank you. Philip, do you want to continue or are you finished?
I'm done.
Great, thank you. Chuck?
Yeah, I think that by the next call, we need to decide whether there is hope, and Philip's comments were encouraging, that we need to decide whether there's really any realistic chance of us coming up with a consensus position on voting structure and work on that if there is. If we determine that there's not, then I think that we would be better focusing our attention on what information we provide the board in the decision they have to make.
Great. Thanks, Chuck. Alan?
I'm just wondering if we're close enough to the deadline where people can try to outline under what conditions would they sway at all from the positions they've taken so far. Maybe it's too early to show one's cards, but I'm just wondering if there's any way we can get a little bit closer on the parities in the various directions and the thresholds and, you know, sort of what could induce someone to change their position a little bit. I mean, I think Avery or someone even said maybe weighted voting isn't so bad and we have to consider that. So council structure and voting structure may in fact be different. Just asking the question.
This is Milton. I'd like to get in.
You'll have to speak up, though.
It's okay.
Yes,
am I in the queue, or is there somebody in front of me?
You are the queue.
Okay. You talk about what's the way forward. It's pretty simple. Somebody has to give something up.
Well, and the question I was asking is anyone prepared to give an inkling of what that might be in this
right,
case?
Right, right. There's kind of a, game theorists analyze as a problem here in that nobody has an incentive to be the first to reveal what they would give up because others would take advantage of it. And so I think I have shown, a great deal of flexibility on a variety of issues, and this hasn't gotten me, I think it's raised suspicions on certain parts, but the point is, we have been trying to explore ways to find agreement. I think that we have, as NCUC, have a pretty clear bottom line, which is parity among user groups, and we have clear preferences, which is, which I'd make clear in my proposals, but that there's a fairly broad range for us to accept things within those parameters. So I think it's really, we're not the problem here, and we will look at any reasonable proposal
that people make, and if that's the only way towards total agreement, we'll consider it.
Comment from Alan.
Just one note as the moderator. In noting that we didn't have a plan moving forward, I wasn't identifying anybody as a problem. So please don't anticipate or consider yourself such Milton. Go ahead, Alan.
Just an answer to Milton, there's an old saying that no good deed goes unpunished. So, the kind of thing I was thinking of is not saying something isn't important, but saying, is there a way to modify it? And the example I'll give is there a way we can adjust thresholds which would make, as an example, registrars and registries comfortable that they don't have half the votes minus the NOMCOM if they should exist? Or other things like that. Are there ways to mediate problems that are otherwise there? Well, I don't have an answer. That's the question I'm asking in general. I use one particular example that's simple, but there may be others as well.
This is Milton. If I could jump in.
Over to you, Milton.
Okay. Yeah, I thought that the idea of NOMCOM appointing the chair of the GNSO was very significant, and that, you know, if the NOMCOM advocates are willing to bend and agree that the the actual constituencies would make up, or the stakeholder groups would make up the bulk of the GNSO, but the NOMCOM would appoint the chair, I think that's a real win-win. It's an excellent idea that might sort of square the circle. There could be other things around the margins in terms of the concessions that Chuck has made about, or John Nevitt made about, you know, fiddling with the composition of the NOMCOM. I would like to really think that idea of who chairs the GNSO would be a very important step forward.
I'll get in the queue to comment.
Alan, you're free to go.
I clearly it's a new idea that I haven't checked with my constituency. I'll give you my personal take on it, and that I don't think it really addresses the issue. We're looking to a large extent for people with new ideas. And to say that's the chair, well, in many cases, a chair feels they're not even supposed to really participate in the discussion and certainly not try to sway the group to any large extent. And so I find it uncomfortable to say that the outside ideas are going to come from the chair. Yes, the chair may have a weight in a tie situation, an ability in a tie situation, but that's not what we're looking for. We're not looking for ties. And I don't think that really addresses the NOMCOM issue, but that's my personal opinion.
Let me
Hold on. Well, okay, Avery and then Milton. Anyone else want to Philip, Steve? Okay, Avery, Milton, Philip, and Steve. Avery, you have the floor.
Okay, thanks. I'm not forming a personal opinion on it yet. I'm really asking questions. It's obviously something that I'd have to take to the other NOMCOM and see what they thought of it. But a couple presumptions I would make and a couple questions I would ask while we're talking about this idea so I have a fuller picture. One is I assume to be a non-voting chair and that therefore the position of this chair would merely being a strange word to use perhaps, to help form consensus, to help this, but not actually to bring in viewpoints. Another thing that I would assume, just given the backup, given rotation of people, given the need to have a chair that perhaps has some idea about how a council works, so that you're just not importing someone that's completely new, is that, you know, that there would be more than one NOMCOM appointee still, and perhaps the vice chair would also be this, and there'd be some kind of rotation. A question I'd like to ask is, even among those who thought that NOMCOM was some sort of travesty as a voting party, believed that perhaps NOMCOM could bring in external skills, would there still, in this emerging proposal, be a desire to have the non-voting, whatever the skill was that people were talking about. So I guess in terms of my going back to my fellow NOMCOM appointees and saying, hey, there's this thing on the table, I'd like to understand more about it. As I say, I'm totally reserving my view on it until I've talked to others.
Thank you, Ivy. Perhaps Milton and you.
Yeah, I'm still in there. First of all, I had in mind a voting chair, not a non-voting chair. That's a simple prescription that you can make. Secondly, why wouldn't this chair bring in views? In the sense that existing chairs have views, right? I mean, they're drawn from the constituencies. There's no way that they don't have views, and they argue those views, and they have had, you know, I don't think Chuck or Aubrey have had any difficulty in, you know, taking off their chair hat and expressing an opinion, so I don't see that as an obstacle at all. The idea of a vice chair that sort of gets prepped or apprenticed to become chair is an interesting one. Might explore that. And on the question of skills, maybe, you know, one of the big potential weaknesses of the Board Governance Committee proposal is the question of who chairs these working groups, because, you know, working groups really will fail unless they have good chairs. So another possible expanded role for the NOMCOM, although there may be some practical issues with this, is to create or appoint working group chairs.
Could you put me in the queue, Alan?
Sure thing. Thank you, Milton. So, Philip?
Thank you. I'm slightly reminded of the words of a certain U.S. president: ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. In asking not what NOMCOM can do for us, but what we can do for the NOMCOM, we seem to be having a discussion slightly the wrong way around in trying to find now a new job for the nominating committee. Now, it strikes me the nominating committee exists as a concept that was intended to serve ICANN in a certain way. And so while I'm not discounting the suggestion on the table, I'm slightly nervous about its starting point, which seems to be finding an alternative job when one legitimate argument may simply be that there is no job. So I'm just slightly concerned there. And if we did move in that direction, you're then starting to suggest that the criteria that the nominating committee will be looking for was basically that of a professional moderator, which then suggests that what's left on the GNSO Council is in need of professional moderation because they are a set of opposing factions, which seems to be counterintuitive to the whole concept of the working group model, etc., that we are attempting to put together. So I just find two routes of logic that I'm not quite comfortable with.
Thank you, Philip. Steve?
Yes, I think on this point I would disagree with Philip. I think that potentially this is a skill that the nominating committee, first of all, that the GNSO Council could use, and second, that the nominating committee, if instructed to find people with that skill, could do that. I think it will be something like this will be useful even if, as we move to the working group structure. I guess my preference would be that this person be non-voting, except in case of breaking a tie, which is a model in a number of bodies that have a chair. But I'd certainly be open to further discussion on that. And I guess just to get back to the bigger picture for a moment here, one thing I would like people to, I would encourage people to think about is, you know, we're talking here about numbers. There are obviously are issues behind the numbers, but this is basically a negotiation about numbers. And the classic way of resolving such a negotiation is to split the differences. And I think we have had proposals on the table that would do that mathematically or arithmetically. By definition, when that happens, everybody is giving up something, and I agree with Alan, and as I've said before, we can't possibly reach agreement unless everybody gives up something. And I think that the arithmetical split along the lines of 4, 4, 6, 6, and 1.5 is in fact quite defensible in terms of some of the other issues we've talked about, what the proper balances falling, you know, what has to be put together to get a supermajority, what, you know, in other words, what is a blocking minority for a major decision. And so I guess I would just encourage people to think about that. There is no shame in reaching the split the difference conclusion. It happens every day in negotiations that are much more momentous than what we're talking about here. So I guess I would just urge people to keep an open mind about that.
This is John. Could you add me to the list, please?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Steve. We have Alan and John.
Okay. First, just a quick comment in response to Steve. I agree with the concept. I'm not sure the proposal you made is actually splitting the difference, but we can debate that separately. With regard to the NOMCOM appointing the chair, I have a couple of comments. First of all, I think it is... I disagree with Philip. I think it's completely within scope for us to say we believe that should be a NOMCOM requirement. I think it's up to the NOMCOM review to decide how the NOMCOM is composed to meet that need, but that's a different issue. On the other hand, I have a lot of trouble saying the NOMCOM should appoint someone who's a good moderator, because that would come at the expense of someone whose ideas are the kinds we're looking for right now, and I think takes away the very... type of person that we want the NOMCOM to appoint under today's rules, or under the ones that I have been talking about. So I think selecting someone as a moderator from NOMCOM removes the other requirements, and that's difficult. On the other hand, we could say we want a paid moderator, you know, that I can't simply have to belly up the money and provide one. The last thing to consider on NOMCOM is, as good as they may be, they occasionally appoint a dud. And we've all seen them in various capacities. And that's the last thing the GNSO needs, to have someone who's appointed because they talk a good game and convince the NOMCOM that they're appropriate, and then they can't do the job. So something to keep in mind.
Thank you, Alan. John?
I just wanted to address the point that Steve made about splitting the difference. And my question is, splitting the difference between what and what? Essentially, the Board Governance Committee proposal might not be the ideal from certainly my perspective. I don't know about others. So when you're talking about splitting the difference, in my eyes, they already did that. They already looked at the various options out there and came up with something that they thought was fair in the middle. So to use that as one end of the goalpost is, I think, unfair for a lot of reasons. I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Thank you, John. The key is open at the moment. Would anyone like to join? I'd make a quick observation while folks collect their thoughts, and that is this vehicle or the format that we've used in terms of these group discussions is very useful. I have no way of knowing, I don't think Glenn either, whether you all have pursued offline, off-group discussions, but clearly I would not think that would be prohibited from the process if you all had, you know, offline discussions prior to these calls to help you reach some conclusions or some compromises that may not be possible in the group dynamic that we have. I hope that's not an inappropriate comment for the group, but just an observation from how things have gone so far.
Yeah, this is John again. Could I add one more point?
Sure.
Just in response to Philip's comments, British Prime Minister said, a pessimist sees the difficulty in every opportunity, an optimist sees the opportunity in every difficulty. So I'm trying to be optimistic here, and I proposed my solution in good faith, and I hope folks took it that way. And to the extent there are other ideas out there, I'm more than happy and open to hearing them.
Thank you, John. Any other observations or comments from anybody at this stage? Well, Philip, I think you made a point that no one has objected to yet, and that is the sense that discussion continuing on this call is appropriate without looking toward any end game, but with the expectation that perhaps on the next call there might be some additional compromise proposals or other ideas that will come forth that can help the group focus on some particular areas.
Rob, and again, adding to what I said, and it goes in line, I think, with what Philip's suggesting there, is that I think by our next call on Thursday that we really do need to know bottom line positions so we know whether we've got any hope or whether we should pursue a different direction and just provide the board with information that they can use to make their decision.
Chuck, if I can ask the question, what would that look like in terms of a statement from each party that's saying, yes, I still see a path toward compromise, or how would you envision that discussion taking place?
Well, I think each of us needs to be very clear on with regard to the, I mean, our big difference is the parity issue, and I think there's a couple different forms of parity. But the one critical one, at least from the perspective of contracted parties, is contracted and non-contracted parties. And I think that, if in fact there's no room to budge on that on either the contracted side or the non-contracted side, we need to know that. And then we need to know that not later than Thursday. Because if there's not any room there, and I commend the efforts to try and deal with people's issues in other ways, like the NOMCOM, and I hope we can be successful at that. But if the bottom line is that we can't, then we need to know that by Thursday. And I'm certainly willing to come prepared to communicate where the registries are in that regard. In fact, I went out to the registries on Friday. I've only heard back from a limited number of people so far, just to see where people were at within the registry constituency with regard to the whole contracted, non-contracted parity issue to make sure that I give adequate opportunity for any variance there, if there is any. So, and I will continue to pursue that between now and Thursday within the registry constituency.
This is Steve. Can I get in the queue?
I heard Aubrey, Steve, and then Tony. Did I miss anybody in the? Okay, Aubrey, please.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to point out and say, you know, having said, that I think the parity issue actually exists in the two dimensions. There's the contracted parties versus, we've used all kinds of words, and every word seems to fall.
Aubrey, excuse me, Aubrey. Yeah. I don't know if it's my phone, but I'm having real difficulty hearing you.
Me too.
Okay, I'm speaking right into it. Okay, sorry. Is that any better?
Yes.
Okay, I'm just speaking louder. So anyhow, I think we have the two levels of parity: the one that was just spoken of, and the parity between the non-commercial and commercial non-contracted parties. And so I think we have to view both of those. And that's all I wanted to bring up.
Is anybody against parity between commercial and non-commercial users?
The only point I've made, Milton, and you've heard it many times, is that there needs to, we're making a big jump, but in terms of there's a huge expansion envisioned for the non-commercial side, and it's going to take some significant work to get there. We're not there yet, and to give parity without there being broad representation, I think has some risks with it.
Okay, I'll take that as that you are against commercial, but
no, I'm not. That is wrong to take it that way. But
I don't see a huge jump in going from 3 to 4. What's the huge jump from going from 3 to 4 members on the council?
3 to 4? I'm sorry, I don't understand your question.
The Board Governance Committee is offering 4444 with respect to the constituencies. What is the huge jump in non-commercials going from 3 council reps to 4?
It's not the number of reps, Milton, it's the percentage of votes. And one-fourth of the votes for a group...
21%, to be precise.
I know the percents. Without that group actually establishing the mechanisms whereby that broader representation of the non-commercial group can happen, I think it's a real issue and that we'd be naive to ignore that. I have always been for adequate representation of the user side. What I haven't seen is good mechanisms to produce that, where that can happen. And that's the challenge that's in front of us.
Okay. Can I get in the queue?
Yeah, I'm going to... This is my queue at the moment. It's Steve, Tony, Milton, and Alan. Philip, after Alan. Steve, you have the floor.
Yes, it's 2 points. First, just in terms of the last exchange, I would agree with a lot of what Chuck said, and I say that as a supporter of parity between the commercial and non-commercial groups. I think even if we agreed on that, there are other questions to be answered about ensuring broad representation. I think that's actually true in a lot of constituencies or a lot of the groups, and if we are able to agree on a voting structure, we should certainly also try to come to agreement on what kind of criteria would have to be met for these stakeholder groups to become functional and to actually select these representatives. So I think that's almost, in a sense, a second-generation issue, but I think a very important one. Secondly, in terms of the way Chuck phrased the parity issue, just as the parity between contracted and non-contracted, and it almost strikes me that you're posing that in a binary way, and then you say somebody has to get off their position. So it's a win-lose situation the way you've posed it. Now, if let me pose it a little differently. Are the contracted parties prepared to agree to a structure in which they do not have as many votes as the user side? And that is the alternative that is in front. I mean, the BGC proposal is that they have an equal number of votes, and the alternative is that they have an unequal number of votes. And I think you've seen signs of a lot of willingness to discuss exactly what those votes should be. But if there's a red line that you can't cross to having an unequal number of votes in that relationship, then, you know, I'm not saying we need to hear it right now, but we certainly would need to hear it by Thursday. And I recognize that both of you guys are consulting with your constituencies on this, as are we. But I think that really kind of encapsulates what we're facing here.
And, Steve, that's exactly what I was saying. And that's what I've gone back to the registries and asked.
And vice versa.
I didn't understand what's vice versa.
I would hope that you guys are looking and talking to your constituencies to see if under what circumstances parity would be acceptable.
Parity as in an equal number of votes between contracted parties and users.
Correct.
Well, we're prepared to discuss that with our, at least I'm prepared to discuss that with my constituency, but I think the way Chuck has phrased this, someone's got to get off the position that they came in with.
And, Steve, I don't think you and I are really saying different things. What I'm saying is we need to know by Thursday whether any of us are willing to do that. And if not, then let's take a different tactic and prepare information for the board so that they can make the decision.
And for the record, I certainly have moved from my opening position.
You haven't moved from your opening position on this question. Your proposal still had an 8-8 split. It did have other features.
You said, I think your quote, Steve, was that whether folks are willing to move from their opening position. So
on the parity question, as Chuck has phrased it, I think I tried to say equal number of votes between contracted and non-contracted parties. And you have not moved off that. You've moved off other aspects of the proposal. Yes, I agree.
Correct. Okay.
Thank you.
Steve, anything else there?
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Good discussion. Tony, you're next in the queue.
Okay. Whenever we discuss parity, it's always a difficult issue, and it doesn't matter whether you're talking about parity between the contracted parties and the other interests, or whether it's between the commercials and the non-commercials. But there is one element that frequently is glossed over, and I think this is where the pushback came against the board governance approach in the first place. And that was that the business or commercial community effectively lost parity straight away, because they were the one group that suddenly lost four seats or four votes through that proposal. So those groups would certainly argue that they haven't even got parity, let alone discussing whether they want to keep it or whether they don't. And it rather worries me if we're moving down the path now of making a binary decision, and I realise it's getting late in the day, but to make a binary decision still on whether you'd move on that, I think is a difficult thing to do. You may come up with an answer that if you were to have some more discussion around some of the grey areas, it might not be such a binary decision, certainly with some people in the various constituencies. I think that's true. For instance, there is, and we all recognise there's a concern from the contracted parties on the reasons they want parity, but I just wonder if there are specific areas of policy where they would feel stronger about that than other places. And whatever happens, we're going to have to look at some of those things, because I think it was Chuck who made the comment earlier that even if we suddenly find we can't move forward and come up with a solution, we're going to have to look at what advice we do give to the board. And a lot of that is going to be around these grey areas. So asking constituencies to make a hard and fast binary decision, I think, is a difficult thing, even though it's getting late in the day.
Thank you, Tony. Milton, you're next in the queue.
I think, Chuck, you really kind of blew an opportunity here. If this group could agree, perhaps not on everything, but if it could agree that there should be parity between the user constituencies, it would at least give the board some advice that they could use. And if you're not willing to make that very simple concession, you're giving me no incentives whatsoever to make any concessions to your side. So I think that was not very well thought out response. Let me just say that this business of NCUC having to meet some special requirements to somehow justify parity has a lot of logical and empirical problems with it. If you're saying that our level of participation is insufficient, I would have to say, compared to what? Compared to, you know, getting nine registries whose entire business depends on the decisions of ICANN into a room? It's very easy for registries and registrars to get participation because the stakes are high. I would like to see you convince just sit down with the head of the ACLU for 15 minutes and try to convince them to spend resources on an ICANN meeting. I think it would be very interesting. Now, the ACLU is a member of NCUC, but they're not active, and they really don't prioritize ICANN. And frankly, given their agenda, unless ICANN does something really, really bad, they never will prioritize ICANN. They see it as a very narrow issue. We have as many non-commercial organizations with nominal membership as I think the business constituencies. The question is, getting nonprofit organizations and smaller, advocacy groups to invest thousands of dollars in what they see as a very narrow issue is just not going to happen. And if you, you know, take something like the level of participation you get out of ALAC, which, you know, commands a very large budget subsidy from ICANN, to the amount of participation you get from NCUC with completely self-supported activity, I think it's actually pretty impressive. The other question related to that is, how do you encourage more non-commercial organizations to get involved by telling them that they get less votes than everybody else and can be outvoted on any issue? I just don't see how you do that. So that's my response to yours. Again, I think the wise thing for us to do would be to simply settle that issue for the board. I think there's enough support on both sides of the equation to include in our report the idea that there should be parity among the user constituencies, and that we should do that.
Could I respond to that, Rob?
I think that's appropriate, and then I'd note that we have Alan and Philip in the queue.
You may want to delay the response, because I'm going to ask you a question also, but it's your call.
Go ahead.
I was a little bit confused when you were talking. I thought registries were among the groups that were willing to accept the more Board Governance Committee majority report, which did call for parity between the two types of two user groups. So that confused me a little bit.
Well,
one other comment, but I'll let you answer that.
Yeah, and in fact, that's what I was going to clarify, because I see that I created confusion. Absolutely, the registries are supportive of the 4444. So, Milton, if I implied that we're not supportive of that, I apologize. That is not the case. I raised what I believe is a very legitimate issue on the non-commercial side, and it's not a non-issue for other constituencies, as I thought Steve said very well. We all have to deal with representativeness in that. In the case of the non-commercial, you know, there are some big unknowns there, and that has some risks. I raise that as an issue that we're going to have to deal with, not that I'm arguing for lack of parity between users between commercial and non-commercial users. It's a real issue we've got to deal with, and I thought Steve said it very well, that, you know, maybe that is an issue that has to be dealt with in our GNSO improvements effort going forward rather than in this, but it is an issue, and it related to the question that was asked. But yes, I'm, you know, we're supportive of the 4444 recommendation of the working group, and that is parity there.
So, Alan, you said you had the question. Did you also have a question?
The question was to Chuck, and he answered it. My other comment was a very short one. One of the suggestions that's been made, particularly on the parity on, quote, users or whatever the term is versus ICANN contracted parties, is it possible to change thresholds to make up for an imbalance in number of votes? And my only comment there is one has to be a little very, I support that concept, but one has to be careful. If you raise thresholds too high to compensate for imbalance, you make it potentially very easy for one stakeholder group to veto any given measure. So.
Thank you, Alan. Philip, you've been very patient. You missed in the queue.
Thank you very much. Just one comment first on parity, and then one specifically on user groups. Parity is basically another way of saying equal votes. I think we need to be clear about that. And for me, what is more interesting to hear is why does any one block feel they need equal votes with another? What's the underlying issue that is trying to be solved by that? I think that discussion will be more fruitful. And my second point concerns the parity issue, users, commercial and non-commercial. Now I'll share with you, without naming names, comments I had from, I think, three board members, when we were discussing with them the joint user proposal, which, if you remember, was 3366. And a couple of comments came back to be quite frank, which are saying, wait a minute, are you saying now that the your grand idea for the balance of power, balance votes, a swing vote, is going to be towards the NCUC. That's your big suggestion for change. Are you mad? And my response to that was absolutely not, and that the reason the joint use proposal got the support of the commercial constituencies was that we envisaged a fundamental change in the structure of the non-commercial group by the inclusion of the at-large structure in some way in that. And that was a great addition that ICANN has indeed invested substantially in at-large. And we asked at-large before we made that proposal, do you feel now you are mature enough in terms of your structure and your processes globally that you can be a body that is robust enough for the consulting of policy cascading from the top and then feeding back to you from the bottom in a coherent way so that you can provide input to representatives in a new non-commercial users constituency? And the answer we got back to that was yes. We feel we are mature now in that structure and that we can provide that. And that answer gave us comfort to say that, well, if that's the case, you know, we see the general broad interest that we pursue in the commercial side, which is the internet a safe place to do business, as being rather similar to where we expect the broad interest of the at-large to be, which is the internet a safe place either to participate in business opportunities or to communicate safely. And that gave us the comfort to make that proposal. So it was under those conditions that we go forward with this idea. And for us, it is absolutely essential that we are convinced that the commitment of at-large and the commitment of the NCUC to that process of reform is inherent in any request for parity, whatever those numbers may be. Thank you.
And Alan.
And Tony.
Okay, great, Aubrey.
Okay, yeah, I just have a question because I'm getting confused. I understand that the 3366 proposal is predicated upon ALAC becoming part of that last six. And yet, if I understand what Alan's been saying, is that that's essentially a non-starter, that what ALAC is looking for is the inclusion of more people, more user community, in the non-commercial, but it's quite specifically not the inclusion of ALAC. So I'm wondering if there's a disconnect or I'm just not understanding.
Could I get in the queue? This is Milton.
I'll put you in the queue, Milton, and perhaps, Alan, you can answer Avi's question as you're next in the queue.
Peter, can I make a quick response before Alan does? I agree Alan should be the person to answer. Just to say that I was, I hope, correctly using, if I didn't, my mistake, at-large structures as description in terms of incorporation within the new non-commercial users group, not ALAC, the at-large advisory committee.
Thank you, Philip. Alan?
Okay. I'll try to make this as clear as possible. We are definitely not talking about at-large or ALAC participating in council activities through any of its constituency or stakeholder groups. ALAC may well be involved in the initial consciousness raising and beating the bushes to try to get some of these groups to form. The BGC report states very clearly that we didn't have a lot of luck forming new constituencies within the current GNSO. It's going to be difficult and require real resources to form some of them in the new structure, and we expect ICANN to follow through on that and to be acting as one of the bodies that will help create this. Whether at-large structures, ALSs, will form part of this a new constituency or one of many new constituencies in the non-commercial group, I don't know. It certainly can't be something which is said from the top from ALAC to orchestrate. It can't just be
at capitalized at large in under a different name. I like to think of it as being at large with lowercase. That is, it may well use some of the resources of the capital case ICANN at large, but it's different, and some of them are going to be very different. And the example of consumer advocates, I think will have nothing to do with at large in general. There may be a tiny bit of overlap, but that's coincidental.
Okay,
so it's going to be a difficult thing to do. It's not ALAC, certainly, and it to a lesser, once it gets really going, it's not even going to be at large completely, although the at large and ALSs may end up being part of that component.
Okay, can I ask a quick clarifying?
Sure.
So it's not ALAC, but it could be ALSs and ROLOs.
I didn't mention ROLOs.
I think
that's too closely tied to the ALAC itself. But the ALSs are independent and have, existed for other reasons in most cases before they joined the ALSs. And I think that's some of the fodder, as it were, that will create help create the new stakeholder or new consent constituencies.
Thank you, Aaron. Tony, you're next in the queue.
Yeah, the comments made by Alan, I think, clarified a few things for me. I mentioned grey areas before. I think whatever happens, I think we're all coming to a conclusion that there needs to be some follow-through in whatever form it would take, no matter what the answer is and whether we agree anything or not. But the other thing, I'd just like to come back to Alan with a question. You mentioned some concern around the raising the thresholds, and it could make things difficult. The thresholds are really only important where we have consensus policies that the board has to implement. Are you not in a position, Alan, where you take some comfort from the fact that it doesn't mean it wouldn't result in policy being implemented, but it just raises it to another level of discussion? You get no comfort from that at all if you raise the threshold?
Oh, I get comfort. I was just having gone through the math a few times in some of the analysis I've done. Raising thresholds, if you raise the threshold to 80%, that means 20% of the council can veto something. And if 20% maps to a lower number than the number in any given stakeholder group, there's a problem there. So raising it brings comfort at one level and discomfort at another. I was just pointing that out.
Okay. Fine.
Thank you, Tony. Milton, you're next in the queue.
Yeah, just to elaborate on the dialogue between Philip and Alan about the nature of at-large participation in the new non-commercial stakeholders group. The point was that the ALAC as ALAC would not, formally delegate people to this non-commercial stakeholders group and ALAC as ALAC would not be represented on the council. But that at-large structures, who are already, for the most part, non-commercial organizations, would be encouraged to move into the non-commercial stakeholders group, and that individuals, who the at-large is also supposed to somehow represent, individual internet users who wanted to take a non-commercial-oriented approach to policy development would also be allowed in, as would, of course, we hope that the business constituencies would admit individuals who were consultants and interested in the commercial side of policy. So that this would indeed involve a significant broadening of the non-commercial stakeholders group. It should also be noted that the structural distinction between at-large structures and non-commercial users constituency is already beginning to soften quite a bit, and this is all to the good. Our joint meetings have become regular. Several organizations have either chosen one or the other are now joining both, and we have created this provisional individual participation policy in which individuals are now able to participate in NCUC. So, we we are already taking steps to broaden the constituency and make it more something that brings in the ALAC side of the equation, or rather the at-large side of the equation. So I think that's what Alan is saying, and I think it's consistent with my view of the situation.
I have a comment when you're finished.
I am finished.
Robert. Great. Just to confirm, did I have anyone else in the queue after Milton? At one point, Avra, you had asked to get in, but then you asked your question.
Yeah, I asked my clarifying question.
Okay. I've got Alan, then somebody else wanted to get in the queue? No? Okay, Alan.
Milton's comment, he was flipping between constituency and stakeholder group, and I'll give you what my impression is, and maybe Milton has a different one, I don't know. My impression is NCUC would be a constituency within the non-commercial stakeholder group. So NCUC may or may not widen its scope and accept different things, but I envision other constituencies forming part of that group. You know, an example might be, users, in some formation or other from at large or something, consumer advocates. I mean, we're in the situation within ALAC right now where we, at one point, we had two members who, when talking about who is, took diametrically opposite positions because both of them, from their point of view, thought that answer was the right way to support users. So, there may well be non-commercial entities that want to participate in ICANN, but completely disagree with the positions NCUC has taken, and I think there should be a home for them.
Well, there is a home for them. They can join the constituency and try to persuade people that their position is right, or we can... please don't interrupt me, Alan. Alan, can I talk?
Oh.
Okay. This business of constituencies is not really relevant, I think, to our immediate problem of finding a voting distribution out of this consensus working group. Our conceptualization of how constituencies relate to stakeholder groups is something that would have to be worked out as part of the GNSO reform process, but I don't think that's something that's an appropriate topic to discuss now. As part of this group, I think it's a distraction.
I think it's an appropriate thing to discuss somewhere. Because from at large's point of view, there is a significant difference between NCUC is the non-commercial constituency group and NCUC is a constituency
group
within the stakeholders group.
Right, I don't think it would be difficult for us to come to an agreement on how to handle that, but I don't think that has anything to do with the problem of getting this working group to come to a consensus agreement on the voting distribution of the stakeholder groups. You're talking about an intra-stakeholder group issue, and we need to be focused on the voting distribution across the stakeholder groups.
We may differ on that.
Well, I don't see how you can. I mean, how can you say that this working group, which has been charged by the board with a very specific problem of coming up with a voting distribution, is supposed to also solve an internal structural issue within a particular...
The reason I raise it, I've heard a lot of other comments, or a number of other comments, of a level of discomfort, and making it clear that we're not just talking about a larger NCUC, but talking about a stakeholder group of constituencies, I think would alleviate that level of discomfort significantly. I may be wrong.
I think you are wrong. I don't think that has anything to do with the level of discomfort. The level of discomfort is reputedly has something to do with the number and amount of non-commercial organizations that are involved in ICANN.
Okay, we'll see if anyone else has a comment.
Well, I'd comment on that, Tony. I think whatever we come up with, we've got to also recognize that it's just a proposal that goes to the board, and if there are things in there that they still have concerns over, or things that can be said that make that more palatable, I think it's in our interest, and I'd suggest that this, some thinking along those lines may make that more palatable to some board members.
Thank you, Tony. Does anyone else like to want to be in the queue and make a comment? In our time remaining, I'd like to touch on two things. One, as this discussion continues, I think just in terms of the moderator's role, I tend to agree that you all have to come to some decision point in the next call, because I can already see the time commitment that's going to be necessary for editing and revising the draft of whatever document does get drafted as we move forward, because I do see that there are still some significant tonal, perhaps, concepts or just some fundamental understandings that won't be fully explored until pen actually hits paper. So I think that just underscores the need to have some idea of the roadmap moving forward and where everyone's commitment is when we get together again on Thursday. The other thing that I did not want to lose was a comment, Philip, that you made, and I couldn't tell at the time whether it was a rhetorical question or one that you were looking to get feedback from the group on. It had to do with equal voting and the positions from various parties on that. I don't know if it's possible, Phil, for you to circle back around to that thought, raise it again, and perhaps be the first to volunteer sort of what your group's thoughts are on that.
Sure. What I talked about was parity basically being a construct for equal votes, and the disconnect as to where those that equality should lie. And my question was, it would be more useful to understand the underlying concerns to those votes, particularly given the future structure and working groups, etc., that we're envisaging in the new GNSO. I mean, my understanding of our, based on our discussion so far and early discussions, is that the prime concern from the registries and the registrars in relation to votes is their ability to participate significantly enough in voting so that consensus policy, which has direct commercial effect upon them, cannot be imposed upon them without consent. My understanding from the non-commercial user side is that the concept of parity is more rooted in one of fairness and equality as a major driver. Recognizing the not wanting to make any, or maybe as a surrogate for not making any value judgments as to the relative importance of commercial versus non-commercial. So let me leave it there and see if my hypotheses are validated or destroyed.
Would anyone like?
Yeah, Chuck will comment.
Okay.
Philip, I just qualify one word you used. I'm not sure that the registry's position is requiring consent. Certainly significant enough involvement in the process so that the impact on registries and registrars is carefully and thoroughly considered. But I'm not sure that the position we've taken requires our consent.
I would echo that, John. If you look at the Board Governance Committee proposal, we have 21-point-something% of the voting share, and it takes two-thirds majority to get a supermajority vote and impose consensus policy on us.
Thank you, John. And Chuck, did somebody...
Milton, could I respond to Philip quickly?
Please do.
Yeah, I think the latter part of your statement accurately characterized what our case for parity is. It has to do with the relative value that would be assigned to commercial as opposed to non-commercial aspects, impacts of policy on the Internet. We would believe that a very large section of the economy and the communication activity on the Internet is non-commercial in nature, ranging from universities and research to
advocacy groups and rights concerns that simply don't fit into a commercial calculus, and that we think that those concerns should have equal representation in the council.
Thank you, Milton. Anybody else that comment? Neither validate or destroy Philip's construct. I don't know whether that's up to validate or change your thinking, Philip. That helpful conversation.
Yes, that were useful responses, I thought.
Are there any other topics or subjects or areas that any member of the group wanted to make sure that we touched on today? We're quickly approaching that metallic horizon of, you know, I think folks expending their viewpoints at this stage.
I have one, Alan.
Thank you, Alan. And anyone else want to join that queue? Because I'm looking to sort of get the final queue, I think, here, given the earlier comments and sort of where our discussion is right now. So please think if you want to get in the final queue, and Alan, you have the floor.
All right. I just want to raise an issue that I raised early on in the process of the definition of who can participate in the what we're now calling user, and point out that the original BGC part of the report that has been adopted by the board does talk about registrants only. From my point of view, it's not a big issue in that pretty much anyone who wants to play in this game is likely to have a registration somewhere. It may be a CCTLD registration, but it's a registration. And I just find it a lot cleaner if we be honest and say we're looking at user issues and not registrant issues. It doesn't change it, in fact, whether who can participate or not because of the fact that registrations are pretty cheap if you really want to buy one to justify your membership. But I guess I'd like to see this group come out and say, let's clean that up at the same time, just to make it clear who we're talking about. It doesn't end up in practice changing who can participate or not, and I'd like to see that in the final version.
Thank you. Does anyone else have any final thoughts that they would like to raise in a final queue? Last opportunity. Hearing none, I would propose then for our agenda for the next meeting that everybody be prepared to declare the group they represent perspective in terms of whether they think that this group will be able to achieve a consensus consistent with the statements that Chuck made earlier in terms of trying to get a clear perspective as to whether all groups can continue to move forward. Secondly, Philip, you did not commit to it, but suggested that you may have a proposal that you're going to be prepared to share at that meeting. I would suggest that there's a possibility to share that as soon as possible or with as much time prior to the call. That would be very helpful.
Sure.
And as we have always done, please continue with the email dialogue, and if folks want to flag things for the next agenda in addition to those two areas, that would be helpful. If we can wrap up, Glenn, with you reminding us all what we are scheduled for in terms of the next call, its duration.
Before that, one comment.
Certainly, Alan, thank you.
I thought one of the other things we decided is that to the extent possible, without, you know, bringing in Milton's game theory of who shows their hand first, is to try to make sure everyone understands what leeways or what options there are. Because if we don't do it at this point, you know, nothing's going to give at all.
That would be great if that can be incorporated into any statements. That would be great. And if no one objects, we'll just go in alphabetical order by first and last names. To give folks sort of that cue to begin the call for their statement next week. On Thursday.
First or last?
We'll start with last name followed by first name alphabetically. And I haven't looked that up ahead of time.
Could you remind me what we should be prepared to do when our name is called on Thursday?
Essentially to, well, Chuck, let me let you sort of summarize, because I was playing off your suggestion.
Well, I think what I said was is that we need to know our bottom line positions with regard to the voting structure, so that we know whether there's some room to play. And let me just, the best way to illustrate it, in the case of the registries, what I plan to communicate, and I'm going to continue to pursue this with the registries in the next few days, is, are we willing to move off voting parity between non-contracted and contracted parties under any circumstances, and if so, under what circumstances? I plan to have an answer for that on Thursday.
Is that helpful, Steve?
Yes, thank you very much.
And we would expect the same answer from everyone else, right?
That's the plan. Great.
I'll just add, to the extent that, that NOMCOM appointees are an issue within any given constituency, that should be made clear.
Fair enough. If all agree to do that and we're prepared, then we can include that as well.
We spent a third of the meeting talking about it. It
seems
to be relevant.
Okay, Glenn, can you please confirm when?
The next call will be on Thursday, the 17th of July, at 16 UTC, which is 9 a.m. Pacific time. It is 12 noon Eastern time. It is 17 hours for London and 18 hours for Central European time.
Great. Thank you again, everybody, for your comments and thoughts, and look forward to our call on Thursday.
Thanks, Rob.
And just one more comment. The numbers remain exactly the same, so does the passcode.
Great. Thanks, Glenn. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.